Stephen, and then Stephanie.
Yeah. Here's my on how to. We can't just accept this as the status quo.
Of course not.
I mean, I'm thinking of EI hearings. You know, they tell you when to show up, and if you don't, if you have a conflict, you phone up and you say, I'd like to adjourn, and then find another date, and it's not a big deal. And the appellant has the right to an advocate in this legislation, so if the advocate has got a conflict, then the advocate with the release of information will be able to contact the chair in Victoria, whoever that person is, and say, we need to reschedule this. And because I'm the advocate and I can't be there, then it needs to be rescheduled. If it has to go beyond the 15 days, then we have to get the consent of the ministry.
That's right.
So with the consent of the ministry, we can go beyond the 15 days if the chair agrees. I mean, these are the things, because the DSs are being told, and the DSs also have conflicts. Sharon, one of the DSs yesterday, we had one scheduled for Friday, and she said, I was told on Wednesday, and I have another tribunal at the same time. So this is going to be happening with 2 days' notice.
Yeah, it already, as you pointed out, it already is happening. It already is happening.
We need to be able to, I mean, I don't know, I haven't experienced this yet, contact the person, because it's not the local panel chair, it's the chair.
Yeah. That's exactly, I mean, I haven't had to either yet, but that's exactly what I would be doing, is contacting the tribunal chair who's supposed to be responsible for that and saying, look, we need an adjournment. Well, actually, not an adjournment. We need to postpone the hearing dates. And, you know, in reality, I might even contact the ministry first and see if the ministry's on side with that, and then approach the tribunal chair.
Roxanne has something.
I'm sort of thinking that it's these newly hot-to-trot appointed chair people that are just kind of on steroids, right, and they want to get this done. But I think that if a lot of that is happening, and I saw the letter that Colette's client got, where he didn't even get a clear notice to show up. And I think if a lot of this is happening, it should be compiled somehow. And maybe a few affidavits from some advocates could be written with attached these notices. And then somebody, I'm prepared to draft something, or David Mossop or Christina, and send a letter to, you know, every ministry has a legal counsel attached to it, and send this letter to the legal counsel of the ministry. And I am sure that this man or woman in Victoria is going to cringe when they see that people are given like 2 hours to run to their tribunal hearing, and if not, you're denied. And then the legal counsel can maybe send a memo off to the minister's office that says, okay, you know what, like, you guys are just a judicial review waiting to happen. You got to do a little bit better than that. Like, I think if you stick their own legal counsel on them, because it's just basic natural justice. You got an opportunity to be heard, and they can't make it impossible for you to be heard because you have less than 15 minutes to get there, right?
Stephanie.
Yeah, I was just wondering when this is done. Say you get an intransigent panel chair who's saying that the hearing's going to go ahead whether the advocate's available or not. Would it maybe the strategy be to get the client to go in and say that he or she was going to intending to rely on their right to be represented by an agent at the hearing, and because he, you know, as well, so they've got something to work from. I don't know.
Yeah.
Those seem like appropriate strategies.
Oh, they.
In that
they've been tried and true.
Yeah. Your clients are mentally ill.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, like, a Supreme Court judge is going to go, what is wrong with these people? A client that's mentally ill, that's looking after their livelihood, you say, I'd like to have some help here because I'm a schizophrenic and I don't function very well. I'm on my meds. I feel really I mean, like, I can't imagine. I mean, you know, it's just a trouble waiting to happen for the tribunal if they deny that.
Yeah.
I agree with Roxana that it is a good idea to potentially to end up going to legal counsel for the ministry. I don't know. I mean, I know that some of us have dealt with legal counsel at the ministry before, and they have been a lot more reasonable to deal with than the average rank and file and bureaucrats in the ministry itself.
There was somebody. No, I've got you. Thanks. Yeah, go ahead.
Of the training?
And it's just a special, frivolous, trivial, or vexatious appeal.
Oh, that's new. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was just really concerned because it's up and down, and where they would that be appealable.
You know, it's new, but I'm not worried about it because, and you know, those of us in the legal business know that those are legal terms of art that have a very specific developed meaning, and it's actually quite narrow. So, you know, the basis on which they can throw something out because they consider it frivolous or vexatious, it shouldn't be happening very often at all. I think they go on then to even define what is an appeal, for example, on page 35. An appeal might be considered trivial if the issue in question is so minor or inconsequential that the appeal could not reasonably be viewed as having a meaningful impact on any person.
The first part of that, it says, it would be necessary to show that the person bringing the appeal has no legitimate interest in having the appeal heard.
Mm-hmm.
How do they prove that? How would they prove in 10 days, which I submitted at a notice of tribunal on September 30th, and was notified by the district supervisor and offered a report that imported to Victoria. And the client was notified yesterday, late afternoon, at the tribunal was this morning at 9.
Mm-hmm. I call it.
when would that decision be made if it was frivolous or vexatious? I mean, how would they conclude it was? How would they conclude in that time that person has no legitimate interest?
Well, they would obviously... You know, the legislation doesn't specifically address when they would deal with this. Like, in other words, if it can be dealt with at various stages. But certainly if it was at a tribunal and the appellant was at the tribunal, they would actually have to listen to what the appellant had to say before making a decision that it was frivolous or vexatious or... You know, it's a very high standard. I mean, they can't just be throwing things out left, right, and center. It's a very high standard.
I'm curious as to how they make that decision. So, how would they?
I guess they would look at the record, right?
They, yeah. Like, what makes
them
important to
you? Yeah. Right. They would likely look at the record because at that point they would have the record, right? They would have the information from both sides. They would have the documentation, the reconsideration decision. They would have all of that. So they'd be looking at the record and they would be making that decision. But I mean, I don't think we really need to worry about this very much. Because I don't think that this is going to be used very often at all, because it's a very, very high standard, and even this silly draft manages to get that point across.
I'm going to take questions from people who haven't asked before right now, because we do have some other things to cover. Lisa, I had you down, and then I've got a couple more. Yeah. Lisa?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I just wanted to just add some levity. I was at a panel this morning with Jada Berry at Langara, and we were with Marion Young from Gravity Office, the SPW office. And she received a notice to the tribunal last night for, at the end of the day for 11 p.m. tonight.
Oh, come on. 11 p.m.? They're not even working then. Oh.
There's a lot of different things going on, obviously. 2 a.m. She has to make sure she has about verifying
the question of the end. Yeah. Stand up.
just a couple things. One thing I noticed on page 28, it talks specifically in terms of adjournment in the appeal tribunal cases that we have. The other thing that I'm wondering is if somebody doesn't appear at their tribunal, the appellate's tribunal, because they haven't got their notice, have they got any recourse on that? Because I understand from this that a decision can be made without them being present. But if their reason for not being present is that they never were notified, do they have any recourse on that? I know normally this appeal decision is final, but in this case, do you think that there's any appeal or any right they have when they weren't notified?
That circumstance, of course, certainly isn't addressed in the legislation at all. But what I would do is then make submissions to the tribunal chair, as opposed to, everyone now knows the difference, right, between the tribunal chair, who, as I was referring to that person before, the grand poobah of the whole tribunal, and the panel chair. Okay, so it's the tribunal chair that handles all the administrative stuff and when and where and how and who. I would be making submissions to the tribunal chair saying exactly what happened and ask for a rehearing or a hearing.
If not, I think there are other recourses, if all fails, judicial review.
Judicial review.
You didn't have an opportunity to be heard, right, because you weren't there. Now, who's going to do all these?
See, that's just the thing. We wait.
I already have a couple that I have, taken an interest in, but, I mean, we can't be half a dozen lawyers doing.